Hey there, this is Ben Currier, self-proclaimed world's number one failure. In this podcast, we'll learn about the hardest moments my guests faced and the failures they endured on their path towards making it. I hope you enjoy. Hey there, friends of failure. This is failure guy Ben Currier here. And today I've got my guest, Fred Moore here. Hey, Fred, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, Ben?
It's pretty great. So do you want to give the listeners and myself a bit of background as to what you do?
Absolutely, absolutely. My name is Fred Moore. I am a speaker slash entertainer. I started 30 some odd years ago as an entertainer mostly. And then in the last 10 years or so, I've been stepping more and more into the speaking world. And especially this past year or so, since the pandemic, pretty much all entertainment stopped, came to a screeching halt. So I've had to pivot so hard I got whiplash and jump just feet first into virtual.
Is it primarily public speaking that you're doing with the entertainment, or are you also doing like other things? What do you mean by entertainer? What do you classify that as? Like what genre or what?
Comedy magic.
Oh, yes.
So okay. All right. Think of, a little bit. If, let's see, let's think of David Copperfield and Jimmy Fallon had a baby, then that would be me. I'd be really ugly. And then you factor in the speaking side. So it would be the love child of Tony Robbins, Jimmy Fallon, and David Copperfield.
Perfect.
Would be this ugly dude right here.
So when I was growing up, we always had this cool little magic shop in town. Well, I mean, they had like magic stuff, but also like weird little trinkets and novelties type stuff. Did you have a similar store growing up that you got all your cool stuff from? Or did you have to order it online through like the back of the magazine thing?
Well, I'm so old that there was no online when I first got into magic. The magic shop that I knew of was probably a good hour and 15 minute drive away at this mall. So yeah. that was a trek. That was like a destination. We're going to go here. And I'm going to get some stuff.
Yeah, I seem to remember. So I was also online, at least when I was growing up. I remember there was like infomercial video things you'd call with like a pack of 50 tricks or whatever. I'm trying to remember all the stuff I did back in the day to learn my little bit of magic. Never did anything with it. But if I did, I'd probably do something like you're doing because I couldn't take it seriously, of course. Or at least hard to put a straight face on when you're doing magic because it's so much fun. You know, it's hard to – I don't know if you ever tried to go down the straight – magic route or if you've danced with that idea.
I did when I first got into it. When I was 16, that's when I decided that this is what I wanted to do for a career. I wanted to be a magician. And at that time, David Copperfield was he was the guy. Yeah. And he was cool and suave and debonair, and I was not, but I tried to be that. I tried to be him as much as I could, because that's what you know, when you first start out, you emulate. You're like, all right, I'm going to do what he's doing because it seems to be working. And then found out, of course, that that doesn't work because nobody wants to see a copy of David Copperfield. They want to see David Copperfield.
Yeah. How long did it take you to find your own voice in terms of like not following along with what another magician did, but kind of carving your own path?
It probably took a while because I wasn't doing it for a living at first. I was making money at it, but it wasn't my full-time vocation. So it probably took a good 10 years before I kind of found the path that I was on. Yeah, and now I'm kind of repeating that too with the speaking in the last 10 years. I'm finding and narrowing down my niche and who my audience is and what my message is and who am I speaking to, that sort of a thing.
Yeah. Did you ever doubt or were you ever questioning whether or not you could even make money doing it? Because I know I picked accounting because I did not want to go down the weird path of not knowing if there's a job, but that was too straight of the road for me. But were you like ever, okay, I got to go do normal stuff? Or was it always something that to you, because other people were doing it, you could do it yourself?
Well, when you're 16, 17, 18 years old, of course, you can do anything, right? Nothing's impossible. I can do whatever I want because you don't know any better. And not that you can't do that, it's just that you don't realize how hard it is at that point.
Yeah.
And I was fully invested in it. Other people in my family weren't. if you can imagine, you're like, what? You're going to do what? And the probably the worst advice I'd gotten was, all right, you should have like a career as a backup, like a real job as a backup. You know, train some sort of a vocation. And I knew me, if I had something to fall back on that was easier than working really, really hard to get what I wanted, which was entertaining, I'd fall back on that. Because, you know, like a lot of people, I'm the path of least resistance. You know, what's going to get me money in the bank? And so the job, and for a while it was, I mean, I was waiting tables at various restaurants just to make money while I was working on the business. But I knew I didn't want to get any, you know, I didn't want to go and get a degree in something that I didn't want to be in for the rest of my life.
Because you thought if you had a safety net, you'd just jump into the net?
Yeah. And that's probably the worst advice you can give somebody is that, forget it all. Just go for it. Don't worry. Lose your house. It'll be fine. Don't worry. Yeah. Don't do that.
You're saying what you did was not like advisable.
Going back, I probably would have done things a lot different. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if you were going to go back and do things differently, what would you tweak a little bit?
I would now specifically for what I was doing, entertainment. I was focused on the skills and getting good at my craft, which is important. But the other equation, the other half of show business is business. So I probably would have gone to college and taken courses on small business, on marketing, on things like that. Mm-hmm. Because when I first got into it, it's like, all right, I have a show. How come nobody's calling me?
Yeah.
Because I wasn't marketing. I wasn't advertising.
Yeah. It's not like if you build it, they will come. It's if you build it, then you got to really convince people to come.
Exactly.
They'll keep convincing them, and then no one will come still for a while.
If you build it, you still have to tell people about it. So.
Yeah. So can you walk us through some of the more difficult times when you were like performing for nobody in a room, or is there any really memorable just poor performances or like, you know, poorly attended?
Oh yeah. When you first start out, I mean, you talk to any comedian and they say that you have to find a place that you can be bad at before you can be good.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where you work all the hole on the wall comedy clubs, the open mic nights, all of that. You just go out because you need to get stage time.
Yeah.
You need to get your act in front of people because there's certain skills. I mean, you can learn to code and you can be really good at that sitting at your desk with nobody watching or getting any feedback from it. But performing, you need to get it out in front of your audience to see if it flies or not.
Yeah.
You can think something is funny or something's amazing to yourself, but when other people look at it, they go, meh, I've seen better.
A good example is what you just said about coding. You can do it just fine, but then when someone's watching you type, you cannot type for the life of you because you're then performing. Or it seems like you can never, no matter what, if someone's watching, you're going slower and dumber than usual in terms of like where you're going to show people how to get stuff, or at least I found, especially at work. And then nothing works like you think it will. And you're like, I just had this working like this. Anyways.
Really?
So
leave the room and come back in 5 minutes and this will be perfect.
But yeah, you don't know until you perform things. You got to like bomb or fail or just realize that it to yourself is not good enough. And then, you know, work on how to make it better. But until you're actually performing up there, it's all like hypothetical in your mind. And
oh, yeah. A big thing is that, well, nobody likes to fail, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get on a stage and totally, totally bomb, it takes a lot of guts and nerves to get back on that stage again and do it. Now, you're going to do it for a different audience, so it's not like, oh, this guy again. But you still, you've got that in your mind of what happened last time.
And also, you're usually bearing your soul up there. At least it's a lot more putting yourself out there. So when they reject that, it's going to be hurtful.
Oh, yeah.
More, of course.
And any job in show business, it's... You have to take it personal because when you audition and they don't hire you, it's not like, well, you don't have the qualifications. No, it's like, we don't like you.
Yeah.
It's you we don't like.
And when they started out liking you more and then they like you less at the end, that's always a good one.
Oh, yeah. You were really great until you started talking. And then
On paper, this was great. So can you were explaining a little bit earlier. Can you explain to me what some of the cool stuff is behind you?
Yeah, well, I've got a whole bunch of business books. It's funny, I've got probably about half of these are business books, and half of these are biographies from comedians or cartoonists, or even some graphic novels and all that.
Can you pick a couple of favorites to suggest? Because I like both those categories and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A great, great book, besides my book, excuse me, do so much more.com. Anyway,
do so much more.com, right?
Do so much more is
just want to make sure you didn't pass over, or like people got it.
Yeah, yeah. Is a book by Stephen Pressfield called The War of Art, not The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
The War of Art.
It's The War of Art. Yeah. And it deals with those nagging little voices in your head of resistance when you're trying to do something maybe that's outside of the norm or something that's different for you. He talks about just getting past those voices, and they're trying to keep you safe because change is bad, but they're not letting you grow. Great book.
It's interesting because when you think about, when a lot of people think of entertainers or creators or people like that, they don't think, or at least I've found people don't think that every single one of them deals with self-doubt and stuff. You know, a lot of times it can be easy to convince yourself that they're all confident and know what they're doing, but absolutely all of them struggle with doing this whole thing, you know, putting themselves out there in really any kind of way. It doesn't really come naturally for that many people. I'm sure people could do it, but I'd say most, 99% of the people you see on anywhere are going to be struggling with self-worth issues and stuff like that. So how do you think you've dealt with some of that stuff over that, you know, long career?
It's funny. I'll go through cycles in my career where I'll be like, I don't think I'm that good at what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'll have those self-doubt and the, you know, imposter syndrome when you're doing something amazing and getting paid for it, and you're afraid that someone's going to find you out. Like, no, you shouldn't be here. Yeah. So I'll get that, and then I'll go into the highs where it's like, all right, I'm pretty good. I'm doing all right. Look at me. I'm hot stuff. And what I'll do to ground myself is I'll go back and look at an old video from 5 or 10 years ago of what I was doing, and just crawl under my desk and be like, okay, maybe I'm not that good, man, because that was me 5 years ago. And
the creative stuff's a lot better when you're in the not full of yourself version of, you know, because then the art is much more intentional and well-informed and less braggadocious.
Oh, exactly. Like, you know, a year and a half ago, I was cruising right along and, you know, doing shows, doing speeches, everything was going fine. And then the pandemic happened. And now I need to change everything I'm doing. Yeah. All the stuff was working, but now it doesn't work. So now I need to pivot and try other things. So.
From a magician's perspective, the transition to Zoom must be both easy and difficult because now you have one vantage point, right? Mm-hmm. But that can be more tough if you need it to be a broader thing. What are the bigger struggles from transitioning?
The number one was just tech, dialing in all the tech and figuring it out. But that's, you know, that was easy enough to figure out, especially once everybody started going that way. So there was a lot more resources.
Are you big into technology and what's up, keeping what's up?
I'm big on what works for me.
Okay.
You know, once I get something dialed in, it's like, all right, I'm not looking for the, you know, the next shiniest, you know, better version of that. As long as it's working, I'm fine. Now, if it's something that's, you know, far superior to what I'm using and does more, absolutely, I'll jump on it.
Yeah, I think I read yesterday George R.R. Martin is still using, like, the oldest version of, like, WordPad or something. I don't know. That's what he's still writing on because I guess it works for him and he didn't need to upgrade. But I think it's funny when people, you find what works and sometimes it can be tough to want to change it because then you have to learn a bunch of stuff. I love getting new technology and learning new things, but it can be a lot. And I know a lot of people don't like to keep up with it, but is there some specific failure you've had during your Zoom time that that'd be worth recounting as you got more familiar with the, you know, how that works?
Yeah. When I first started doing a lot of Facebook Lives, and I didn't have a huge following, which was fine, because the reason I was doing the Facebook Lives was to fail, mm-hmm. to see what was going to go wrong and what wasn't going to go wrong. So if I had 15, 20 people watching the Facebook Live while I was doing it live, it wasn't that big of a deal to screw up something or fail. Because I could always delete the video later, mm-hmm. and do it again. But yeah, I was probably about 15, 20 minutes into a Facebook Live, and everything was clicking. And I looked down, and at that point I had my phone set up to where the Facebook Live was scrolling there, and I could mm-hmm. see the comments. And somebody was commenting, and says, "We can't hear you." My microphone wasn't working for 15 minutes.
Nice. I've done the same thing with where the camera's facing the wrong direction, so they're like looking at a wall or something.
Yeah.
Like, this is so stupid.
Yeah. You learn from it, right? You're like, oh, okay. Okay.
Well, so like, for example, it's a great point because I do these podcast interviews live, and then I had to start making my own separate live or separate like individual podcasts that I haven't even released anything of, just to mess around with like what kind of microphones are like good enough quality. I don't want to like, I always shoot for the moon on this, or I used to. I've gotten better now that I've done that little playground version where I can mess things up. And I've even done like, you know, every type of video, like a Telegram video, a Snapchat, like all the ones to see like what's the quality difference and how much should I give a shit about what it comes out like. Because a lot of times I'll be over perfectionist about like the audio quality, but then I'll take so much time with that I don't get any good content out of it, you know, because I'm like setting up shit and I could have been researching the person or whatever. So like trying to find that right balance of like setup and execution is always tough. So I think your point about playing around and like, you know, messing around with some of these things with low stakes kind of options is a great way to do it.
Yeah. I equate it to, it's, you know, it's the comedian's version of going out to the open mic night.
Yeah.
And trying out new material, because the, you know, there's not that much of you don't have that much skin in the game, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever gone down the straight stand-up route?
I've tried to do stand-up once or twice, and it's like, I'm probably now at this point, if I push it, I could do it, but it's so hard to get a good 10 minutes of mm-hmm. material.
Yeah.
Whereas with what I've been doing with the magic, there's situations and things that need to, and there's funny moments all throughout it, but it's not, I'm writing a joke about this, I'm writing a joke about that. It's more situational comedy.
Yeah. Do you find, so like I teach Microsoft Excel, and so like super boring, meaning there's a low bar of anticipation for comedy. So meaning it's much easier to make people laugh if you're in a work meeting or whatever. I imagine with the magic, you get a similar kind of a bump because, you know, you're doing something else and it's funny. So like, meaning it's the combination of two things. So they're not just fully judging on how funny you are, which is like the stand-up comedy thing is like only that.
Yeah.
So I can imagine when you did that, it's kind of like more of a stressful version of what you're already doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the most pressure I felt was I was doing a gig, and it was a corporate event I was doing. And they introduced me as a comedian. And it's like, okay, if you introduce me as a magician and I do a little bit of magic and a lot of comedy, that's fine. But I'm more of a magician that is funny. I'm not a comedian, because you have a different expectation when you're a comedian, you know, guy with a microphone telling jokes. Where are you from? You know?
Yeah.
Whereas a magician, again, a different perspective. So it was a tough sell for me for the first 10 minutes until I realized, oh, okay, this guy's not really a comedian, he's a magician.
Yeah, and setting expectations is important for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen on the prior episodes that being on this podcast, you get a, I don't know if you want to call it an item, but sure, an item, a get out of fail free card, which you can use to. See, now I would usually pursue comedy or something, but since you are doing that, I imagine you're going to use it to do something else, and I don't know what that would be. But is there something you'd want to use that card for?
I had to think about it because I was listening to some of the earlier episodes, and it's like, you know, because most people would be like, you know, oh, you know, I could never get on a stage and speak or do comedy or anything like that. And me, I'm like, bring it. I don't care. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, it's like, And it was interesting because it's like, you know, get out of fail free, right? So yeah. I can do this thing and not fail at it. And it immediately popped into my mind, well, two things. Superhero would be one, you know.
Mm, yep.
But actually, the first thing that popped into my mind was astronaut.
Okay, there you go. See, that's perfect. I didn't, never would have thought of that. But yeah, I would love it because I would do it, but I hate flying. So, like, I can't imagine going to space. But if there was no failing, I imagine that means no structural failures and other kind of rocket.
Right. That means no crashing. Yeah. So, so that's a good
thing. A good choice then. Because it seems like you're a sci-fi guy. You're saying those are from Lost in Space, right? Behind you? Or is it the same director? Different.
Same guy that did the original Lost in Space TV series, produced several different shows. One is Land of the Giants, and one is Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. And there are two models from those shows.
Very cool. Hey, have you ever seen the movie Yojimbo? An old Yojimbo. Japanese one about, it's like a samurai thing. I don't know. I got to watch it. I just didn't know if you've seen it because it's I'm doing like a, I don't know if you know who Seth Godin is and the Akimbo podcast, but I'm doing a joke episode with Yojimbo as a homage to him thing, but I haven't seen the movie, so I just was selfishly asking if you've seen it so I could find out.
Oh, okay. I gotta watch. So you don't have to see it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I get the cliff notes from you. And what are those awards on there? I imagine there's some sort of speaking awards.
Those are actually from Toastmasters.
Oh, cool. I've done that a couple times.
Yeah, it's interesting because my perception of Toastmasters at the time, before I joined, was that people go to Toastmasters to get over their fear of speaking in public.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine, who was not a performer, but she went to Toastmasters, and I knew her pretty well, I asked her, would I get anything? She was like, yeah, I think you would. I'm like, okay. And I didn't have a fear of speaking in public, but Toastmasters did teach me how to structure the speech.
Yeah, it's good like that. I mean,
and the big thing, the most awesome thing I got out of it was that there's somebody actually there at the meeting that counts how many times you say and use these filler words.
Yeah.
That, and I didn't realize how much I'd used them until I started going to Toastmasters, and that's cleaned up my speech. Hey.
You can almost have like a blind spot when you're only performing and only viewing it yourself from the, especially whether you're not watching a video or anything, you're just remembering it. You can definitely almost black out when it comes to like remembering specific details because you're so focused on the whatever things you got to remember. I know that the more I've done stuff, the more I can be in the moment and like there, but when I first started doing anything like public speaking or whatever, I was just hyper aware of that everything I'm doing is like something that's going to be seen later or whatever later, that I couldn't do the thing in the, like, I couldn't be a human in the normal sense because I'm too busy evaluating how I'm acting or whatever, you know?
Right.
It's a really weird perspective. So the more you can just do any of it, and the more comfortable you're just in front of a camera or whatever, the more you can let your natural self show through. But it can be tough if you're not practicing, you're going to struggle to get there. And then like you're saying with Toastmasters, it's great to have people. It almost sounds annoying to have someone counting that, but it's actually amazing. I mean, to people who haven't seen it, because you know, this is the kind of feedback you need, and it's hard to get from just regular people because they don't want to make you feel bad.
Exactly.
But I think in that setting, it's everyone knows they're trying to get better at it, so it's kind of
it's usually a pretty safe environment to fail.
Yeah,
that's what everyone's there for.
And it's encouraging too. It's like they want you to do good. It's just they want to also tell you how you can do good more easily. And no one acts like they know more than anyone else. It's just more like, you know, just whatever you happen to notice kind of stuff. Because I'm good at giving advice. I'm terrible at taking my own advice. You know, if I could give myself advice and take it, that'd be cool.
Exactly. But you don't want to listen to yourself. What do you know, right?
Yeah. Or how fun is that? You know?
Yeah.
You gotta not listen to somebody. So before we get going on to like any kind of future looking stuff, is there anything specific related to failure that you want to touch on before we talk about what's to come?
Yeah, absolutely. Failure is an interesting concept to me because August 24th, 1994 was the last day that I failed. And that doesn't mean that I've done absolutely everything I've wanted to do in life and in business and everything's been 100% success. But that's when I discovered, I had an epiphany that as long as I get a result, I haven't failed.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people in the world will try something once and that's it. Maybe twice or three times. Three times is pushing it before they just give up and go, all right, well, I'm not trying that again. That's for sure. And which is a ridiculous concept because the important thing is you try and try and try.
Yeah.
Tony Robbins, the godfather of motivational speakers mm-hmm. out there, has a great analogy where how many chances do you get? Do you give a baby? How many times do you let them try to walk before you say, all right, that's it. Nope, you can't do it. Forget it. Right.
Yeah.
You don't limit them. They keep on trying until they learn how to walk.
Two or three times. I mean, it's a crapshoot of what kind of results you're going to get just based on randomness, you know?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. So that's when I figured it's like, all right, as long as I'm getting a result and I'm looking at that result and using that result, the feedback, the information I get from that to change the actions I'm taking, then I'm never going to fail.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is changing the goal to be doing and learning rather than
right. How
it performs or whatever.
Yeah, and I was talking about this a couple weeks ago. Somebody brought up that thing from Empire Strikes Back, Yoda, do or do not, there is no try.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is try, you know? They don't try because they don't want to fail.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, the more times you fail, the closer you are going to be to your goal. So.
Yeah. And if you can fail at it, if you're allowed to and able to and doesn't hurt anyone, why not get used to what that's like? Because you're going to feel it in the real version, you know, at some point.
Right.
So
yeah. Might
as well, you know, get comfortable with it a little bit.
Yeah. I like your caveat, you know, as long as nobody gets hurt, right? You know, well, yeah. I tried skydiving and, you know, that failed. So I'm not going to try it again. Well, yeah, maybe you shouldn't try that again. But.
Yeah. Or, you know, I'm going to go fail at money stuff, so I'm going to take my wife with me. You know, it's not a great
idea.
But yeah, if you're doing it in a safe environment, kind of give yourself like whatever elbow pads and whatnot in life to make sure that, you know, you can't mess it up too bad. It's a good way to go. Now, what do you think is going to be the next big thing you're going to fail at? And what I mean is just the next thing you're going to embark on that you haven't done much of that you're going to mess up until you figure it out a bit.
Oh, that's a great question.
Sounds like Zoom was the most recent one, or like online pivoting.
Online pivoting, yeah. And I'm still failing at that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting the success as far as the bookings and things that I want.
Yeah.
That I wanted at this point. But that's all changing. I mean, we're mm-hmm. pivoting back, but it's still going to be the virtual world. I think is here to stay.
Yeah.
It's just so much easier.
And people already set it up.
It's already in place. It's already, you know, so that's getting easier.
Yeah.
I think probably finding my tribe,
mm-hmm.
finding my niche, finding the people that I want to help or that need my help.
Yeah.
Is probably my biggest failure at this moment.
Yeah. What ideas do you have around that? Or at least I don't know either, but I imagine people who like doing things over and over and messing them up is mm-hmm. part of it. Who are you think you're going for in terms of the kind of person you'd want to, you know, reach?
Entrepreneurs and IT folk.
Okay.
Because I've done the most work in both of those industries, and I'm an entrepreneur as well. So knowing how to work with the time I have allotted and get the most out of it is important, mm-hmm. not just to me, but to every entrepreneur out there.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I've been teaching for the last couple of years is how people can get the most out of their day, how they can get the most out of an hour or a week or a month,
mm-hmm.
and save time and either use that save time to get more work done or use that save time to go play and have fun.
Yeah.
Be less stressed.
I say, keep the time you save and like, don't tell your work that it takes you half the time and just go mess around for a bit with the other half of the time. Because they're not going to pay you more. They're not going to ask for less. They're going to keep asking for more. They'll jam up your time. So,
yeah. And it's funny because a lot of people are working from home now. So there's a bunch of things people can do while they're working from home to save time, to cut down and get the most out of their day.
So you're going to go down the productivity path? It sounds like you're kind of more of a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what the website Do So Much More is about. Being more productive and using your time better.
Is it primarily with these Zooms and online things, is it primarily productivity focused, or are you doing magic in those presentations as well? Or are you just doing, what are you doing nowadays for the public speaking stuff?
Yeah, it's focused on the productivity, but there's also always going to be some sort of element of magic and comedy. The magic is great because I can use it to wake people up, get them focused on the message, get them paying attention, because most people sit there for Zoom calls and like, just, mm-hmm. you know, a talking head or another PowerPoint presentation. Yeah. Where if something interesting and unique is happening in front of them, they're going to tend to pay more attention. And then I can also use the effect as a metaphor for something. Cutting your time in half and restoring a rope.
Okay. Yeah. Do you, if you come up with any fun, like acronyms or anything in your, because I think it's fun when I'm coming up with training to like figure out how do I make this a thing rather than mm-hmm. nothing in terms of a teaching, you know, lesson structure right. and all that stuff. Have you had any fun things that you've come about just through your trainings and stuff where you've got like a 5-step system to whatever the hell? Is there anything like that that you've gotten to yet? Or you've got like little things?
Yeah, actually, in the book Do So Much More, I talk about a game plan, which is an acronym for goal, action, motivation, and evaluation. And that's about setting a goal so that it's achievable and obtainable and trackable. And that has a base of motivation behind it so that it is something you will pursue.
Yeah, I think that's good because a lot of times part of the problem with goal setting is like them being actionable and able to be well made progress on and track any of that progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's good. Before we get to just where can people find you, I just want to make sure if there's anything specifically related to the subject or anything that you haven't gotten to touch on related to failure that you want to mention, because I never know where people have had the most failure. I don't know if it's primarily business or personal life, but I'm always happy to hear whatever people would like to share. And I know you've probably dealt with a lot more failure than most. Is there anything else that jumps out in your mind as you're recollecting what you'd hope to talk about of any prior failures or big mess ups that are worth delving into even just a little bit?
Well, I think mostly it's about, you know, the old saying, if at first you don't succeed, try again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we teach our kids. But as adults, if at first you don't succeed, quit.
Yeah, you shouldn't have tried.
Yeah. What are you, crazy? You know, or if you do try it again, don't let anybody know
yeah.
that you're trying it. The best thing I think you can do is publicly announce, like, this yeah. is what I'm going for. Yeah, I want you to, you know, I want people to hold me accountable, especially you're going to love this.
Do it.
There's always that one person at the office, that negative person, you know, mm-hmm. the one's like, this will never work. Oh, you can't do that. And if you don't know who that person is at your office, it's probably you. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, you know, I'm not judging here, but tell that person what your goal is, what you're going for. You know, like maybe mm-hmm. it's a weight loss goal. I want to lose 20 pounds by, you know, in 2 months. Because they're going to circle back on you because they relish coming up to people and going, hey, remember that thing you said you were going to do? Did you do it? Oh, you didn't. You failed. Huh? Imagine that. Yeah. So you've got that accountability. You've got that pressure now.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's like, right. If I don't get this done, I'm going to have to hear it from this person. And they're mm-hmm. going to be like, And so then you can relish the moment when they do come around. You're like, hey, did you lose those 10 pounds? And you're like, no, I lost 12.
Yeah. And they don't have a follow up usually besides, you know, that's good or whatever. Like they're hoping you didn't get it usually. And what I thought was cool is the what you're saying about putting it out there and stuff. So my license plate's a failure. And now, in order to not care what people think, you really got to not care what people think. There's no trick to not caring besides caring less. But like when I have people drive up next to me and I realize they're going to be judging me and looking at me for what my license plate says, now I don't even think about it anymore because it's so many times I've been like, oh, here comes someone going to look at me. And then after you do that forever, every yeah. time someone drives by, and then you don't care because I just can't care anymore. Because I already thought about it so many times. Now I'm whatever, drumming on the thing and not caring what anyone thinks because, right. and I think putting that out there and putting yourself in a place where you are being judged more and being yourself more is always good in terms of making you feel more comfortable in that space.
Yeah. There was a great quote I heard a couple of months ago, and it's from Ann Landers, who was an advice columnist back yeah. in the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever, and said, you go through periods in your life, like in your 20s and your 30s, you're worried about what everyone thinks about you. And then when you're in your like 40s and 50s, then you're at the mindset was, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. And then when you're in your 60s or so, you realize nobody was thinking about me at all.
Yeah.
They were thinking about themselves, you know, what's yep. going on in their head. And it's just your, you know, you think, oh, people are judging. No, yep. they're probably not.
Absolutely. And then what I just said fits in perfectly, because most of the time people don't even notice my license plate. So I'm just putting it all on them. And yep. they haven't even, I'm already thinking they already saw the website and they've never even read, they didn't even look at it because they're spacing out and doing some other thing with their life. Because obviously that's the most important thing, because they're living their life. But it's exactly. easy to trick yourself into thinking that everyone's reliving that embarrassing moment that you had. Yeah. Even this morning, people forgot about it. You know, like,
yeah,
it's a, but the people who are the most stressed about that tend to forget that that's a thing. You know?
Yeah.
And it can be a helpful reminder that no one cares really. I mean, they barely care enough about their own stuff, or they're trying to figure out how to care about their own thing. They
yeah,
probably
yeah.
don't
think about you. Them.
And if they do, it's for like a half a second and then they move on, you know?
Exactly.
So there's no point in worrying about it. At least. So where can people go to see what you're working on these days and find you in the best way possible?
Well, you can go to dosomuchmore.com, spelled just like it sounds, dosomuchmore.com. Once you're there, there's going to be a little sign up right in the middle of the page that just put your name, your email address, and I'll send you a little PDF. It's 2-page PDF. It's 9 things you can do to get 6 hours back in your week. 6 hours that, again, you can use for whatever you want.
Yeah.
Please don't use it for any evil purposes. Only use it for good. That's the superhero in me coming up.
Yeah.
But yeah, they can check that out there. Plus, you can find me on YouTube, Fred on YouTube.com or Fred on Facebook.com. I was smart enough to buy both those domain names. Perfect. And those redirect to my Facebook and then my YouTube channel.
I love that. How many domains do you have? Because I have a ton of them.
Oh, that's my one of my I have a domain problem. Probably 50 or 60.
Oh, I'm about to
say. My wife's like, it's like, did you get another one? I did.
It's just a funny idea. It's real estate, basically. It's nice.
Yep. And it's usually, if it's an idea I have for a name or something, I'll buy it. I don't even have the thing made or out there, but it's like, I got to buy the domain, because if I don't, it'll be gone.
We should do a follow-up episode where we each pick 10 or 20 domains and we just go through pitching what we think the idea would be, and then the other person give their idea of what it should be.
There you go. There you go. That'd be another episode.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing everything with us. I hope you keep saving people time and figuring out how to word your training in the best way possible so that it gets through to people, because that's the toughest part usually.
Oh yeah.
When you get a good idea and you want to share it, for sure. I wish you all the success and hopefully limit the amount of failures, but not too much, because like we said, we like that type of stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you, Ben. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for joining me on the Failure Guy podcast. If you enjoyed it, feel free to tell somebody. And don't forget, always try to fail it till you nail it. Till next time.